Hello, welcome to Claret and Blue. My name's Dan Rowlinson. I'm joined by Matt Kendrick, who for the audio listeners is waving a unicycle, and John Townley with massive, massive smiles on all of our faces. Loads of people watching this live, by the way, so welcome. Thank you for clicking on our podcast the night that Aston Villa qualified for Europe for the first time since I was a teenager in high school and Matt had hair. Gents, I'll come to you first, John. How are we?
Yeah, I'm buzzing, mate. Everything that I thought it would be. Surreal. It really was to be there at Villa Park today, and yeah, just buzzing with the result, and we're finally back in Europe. It's just crazy, it really is.
And again, for the audio listeners, Matt's already on the beer. How's things over that end, Matt?
You were a teenager in high school. When was that, 2010?
Yeah, I'd have been 15 in 2010, so I'd have been towards the end of leaving school.
Yeah, so what's that, 13 years ago? Yeah, it's a different world. I'd have been 32. So, not much change other than I used to have a quiff. How loud is Villa Park today?
Unbelievable. I'm not quite sure where we're going to go on this podcast, how much we're actually going to talk about the game. I don't know how relevant that is and how much people care about it. We're going to flip between the atmosphere, and I'm sure Prize Where It Lies is going to get a mention from you, Max. I've already seen you tweeting about it. And obviously, European football is the main topic. I'm also very aware that we're doing a live show on Thursday. Tickets are sold out to that, but that's kind of a season roundup where we're going to be repeating ourselves on that and on this. But yeah, let's go atmosphere first. Where does that rank? Because again, there's a bit of recency bias here, I imagine, but that to me felt like one of the best atmospheres I can remember.
Is that aimed at me or John?
I don't care.
Go on, John.
It was, yeah. Yeah, I can't sort of compare it to much because I can't really remember how electric it was before today. But there was like that moment at the end when I think it was like the fourth minute of the sixth minute that was added in the second half. And I think the ball went out and there was like a pocket of cheers from the whole end, not cheers, but sort of like a rousing sort of like, come on, we're nearly there sort of thing. And then it sort of just went around the whole stadium and it would just turn into like a really loud shouting noise. I couldn't really, it wasn't a chant, it was just a noise. And that, in the sort of dying embers of the game, that for me sort of kind of the hairs on the back of my neck stood up. And I actually went on my voice memos on my iPhone and I just recorded it because I was like, I've got to keep this noise. And then, and I let it play from then until it was like Sweet Caroline and all sorts. So yeah, really memorable, and even more so now it's on my voice memos.
You're gonna play it to get yourself to sleep? That's gonna be your relaxing way. Some people have wow music. You're gonna have the alt end doing the nut. because I'm an idiot and I'm an idiot dad. Like when there's that really really loud din, I think it's probably the time John was talking about. Yeah. I turned to my lad and I started singing "This Is a Library." just I'm a fool, and I don't know whether I've said it before, but he reserves the right to swear on match days because that's the rule that we have. He swore directly in my face and it was thoroughly deserved. So
don't repeat it, for God's sake. Don't repeat it on this show. Maybe if I'm the live, I'll let you swear, but not tonight. The recent memory, the playoff semi-final against Albion is probably up there in terms of we're playing for something positive here. Like we're all in this together. You know, if we go over the line here, we achieve... Obviously, you're not promoted then, but we achieved something by getting to the playoff final. That's a comparative to me, like walking up to the ground, people are singing already. There's a load of kind of buzz outside. I miss the coach arrivals, but I've seen videos of it since on social media, and that looks, I forget what people were saying before about it's Tim Pot and small time. That looked great to be part of that, welcoming the coach and all these things, as much as we kind of have it as a bit of a cliche, being the 12th man, it absolutely makes a difference if Villa Park is rocking like that to the players 100%. And it would be amazing if it was like that every single game. It's, you know, it's not always going to be like that, of course, but certainly up there for me as one of the best I can remember. The flags and stuff, great. The pre-match banner or whatever you want to call it in the whole thing, the mosaic flag things looked unbelievable. The fire going off, the music. I thought, you know, Matt, you and me have done a podcast this season about the atmosphere and how do we kind of manufacture it and what can the club do. I think pretty much everything was spot on today. That it was a mixture of kind of, we're going to give you a few things like Jed Steer and Olaf Melberg, but also leave it to you to be organic and sing and make the noise yourself. I think they got it spot on.
Yeah, I thought it was... I thought it was brilliant, and even the first 5-10. Listen, the atmosphere that came from the stands as well, that was natural and not artificially created, I think really set the tone. But in the first 5 or 10 minutes, you know, Brighton a good possession team. And we were pressing high and we were putting them under pressure in the first 10 minutes. I mean, when did the goal come after 10 minutes before then, was it?
I think 8 minutes, I think.
So I think that kind of set the tone. It was almost like, right, okay, we've got ourselves in this position. Let's do everything we possibly can as players, as a team, as a squad, as a club, and as a fan base to get this over the line. And I think, you know, people probably will think of the glorious Aston Villa getting excited about finishing in the, you know, seventh in the league and, you know, the Conference League and stuff. But you've got to factor this into the context of the journey that we've been on, to be honest. And it's not just the fact that we could play some kind of, you know, bloody Romanian, you know, unknown team. This is the fact that this has been the culmination of a lot of peaks and troughs, a lot more troughs than peaks in recent years. So I think, and this probably does sound a bit too cliched, and we've spoken before about getting our Villa back and stuff like that. I think Aston Villa, I'm biased, but I think Aston Villa should be competing at this level. So three or four years of us finishing in Europe, I don't expect it to be quite the same celebration and carnival that it was today. We'd probably get a little bit kind of rolling our eyes, and we'd only want that kind of carnival when we come and bring in a trophy back to Villa. But given that the 13 years since Martin O'Neill went and some of the false dawns that we've had and some of the mess that we've had to deal with, I think we deserve that today. And I think
we'd like
to celebrate it the way that we did.
Yeah. Me and my dad were talking about it on the way over today, and there's been this kind of narrative that, like you just said there, about kind of glorious Aston Villa celebrating a tin pot competition or whatever kind of neutrals we'll throw at it. It's not as good as the Europa League. It's not as good as the Champions League. Villa won the European Cup 40 years ago. Like that, they used to win titles. They're celebrating seventh place. There might be a pitch invasion, blah, blah, blah. It's like, it's the context of where we've been. And I remember doing podcasts, I think maybe the year after we stayed up in the Premier League, and it was kind of like, well, look where we were 2 years ago. We were in the Championship losing to X team. We were almost on the brink of financial collapse. And we kind of said, yeah, but let's stop harking back to the Championship days. Like, it's in the past now. We're trying to move forward. And the Gerrard era comes and goes and fails. And you kind of think, well, you've got to stop looking back at some point. But when you finally achieve something by getting back into Europe, I think that gives us almost the permission to be able to look back and reflect. When a new owner comes into a football club, you hear a lot of the cliche of a five-year plan or a 10-year plan. And it's, we want to do this, this, this. And by then, we want to get to there. And it's a very kind of, oh, yeah, well, let's see where we are. 5 years is a long time in football. But it is 5 years now. I think it's 5 years ago, almost to the day that we lost the playoff final to Fulham and were almost on the brink of financial collapse. Then you get promoted the following year. You stay up. You piss about in mid-table, excuse my French, with Steven Gerrard, and then now you've culminated by getting into European football again, and whatever level it is, I don't really care at this point. You win if everyone's saying this Conference League isn't that great, win it then and get into the Europa League. Like, it's a step into the next stage, isn't it? So absolutely celebrate it. If you're watching this not on Sunday night and you've been out having a drink, I hope you had a great time and enjoy it, because where we've been over the last 10 years or so, this is the best time we've had since promotion. And people are saying, don't celebrate promotion too much because we shouldn't have been in the Championship in the first place. But we were. And to get out of it was an achievement. And now getting into seventh is an achievement. And like you said, Matt, hopefully in 5 years' time, it's that getting into fourth is an achievement, or winning the FA Cup is an achievement. And finishing seventh would almost be seen as not progress.
We've gone full circle, haven't we? As in from where we were under O'Neill. So that's why I think it feels like tangible success, because although we're not winning a trophy for it, this is the... we've got back to where we fell from, if you follow me. It's kind of gone from, I mean, I suppose you could say...
It's almost like a generation of Villa fans to an extent as well. Like I said, I was in high school when we were back in Europe. John, you were what?
I was nine.
10 or something? 9, exactly. That's what I mean. You're now a fully grown adult. Like, that whole 10-year period has passed, or 13-year period has passed, where there's a kind of new blood of fans in now that won't even have seen us win any trophies at all. And the only thing they've seen us do is finish top six with O'Neill and the playoff final. So, yes, we might go out in the group stages of this competition next year. But for right now, celebrate the fact that we've took a step forward into Europe and keep pushing forward as far as you can.
I think the thing is, Dan, as well, that we're not unique in being a fan base that wants to win things and wants to win trophies. There's not that many trophies to win. This gives us another opportunity. You know,
yeah.
Listen, yeah. I'm not ruling us out of the winning the don't clip this. I'm not ruling us out of winning the Premier League title or winning the FA Cup or winning the League Cup next year. But let's be realistic. When we start the season, we're probably talking about, probably not even talking about the FA Cup, because that's like the holy grail that continues to elude us. But talking about starting the season, can we win the League Cup this year? That's probably the thing. At least we've got another opportunity now. And, you know, there will be good teams that we compete against, but this is a competition that we can go in and we can think, well, actually, we've got a chance of going far in this competition. And
yeah,
we still want to be a competitive Premier League force, so we can't be one of those squads ideally who falls off, you know, because they've got Europe as a distraction. But we've got something else. We've got our hat in the ring to go and compete and try and win something else. So I think we need, and we are anyway, but I don't think we need to apologise for celebrating this.
But yeah, the celebration police will be out, won't it, on TalkSport, or you know, neutral fans going, oh, look at little old Villa celebrating seventh place. But yeah, screw them all. I don't care. Celebrate it as much as you want. We're going to talk a little bit, again, we are, like I said, it's the end of the season now. We are doing an end of the season show live on Thursday on the 1st of June, which will be a podcast as well, probably this time next week. And a lot of things we say tonight might kind of feed into that and vice versa, but we've got to talk about Unai Emery. Just an absolute genius. I've called him on social media this afternoon for the kind of turnaround he's done. We've got some of the numbers in front of me that, again, I'll share at a later date. 49 points from 26 games, 43 points in 2023 specifically. Only Man City have more with 53. It's a 1.88 points per game average, which would equal out as a 71 points in a season, which that projected figure, if that was to happen this season, would have tied us fourth place with Newcastle. So let's say we get into the Champions League on goal difference. The turnaround is unbelievable. I would love to stick a video together, and it would take a lot of work, and I probably won't get around to doing it, of the things we've said throughout the year, because there's absolutely no way, you know, even in the mid-season review we'd done when Emery had just taken over and we'd won the first two league games under him, we said about, is Europe a possibility? And Matt, you said, don't be silly. Like, let's move on. It's not even worth talking about. And we'd have said that a lot of times throughout this season. Like, all right, Europe's a step too far.
I knew it was going to happen, really. I just wanted to play cool, do you know what I mean?
Yeah. But the turnaround, it's unbelievable, isn't it? I've run out of words to describe Unai Emery, that I don't want to call him a legend already, because I know that's a word that's thrown around very easily. But I've said before, like, I feel like, if you give Emery 5 years, we'll win a trophy, and that will put him into a bracket of a manager that has done something that, you know, not many managers have done that. So he's heading towards being a legend already, I would say. Like, he's not there yet, of course, but genius, God, whatever you want to call him. I've run out of normal description words for him, because he's better than anything I could verbalise.
Yeah, he's like, I suppose, like, era-defining in a way. Like, without him coming in, obviously we wouldn't be in Europe. We wouldn't have this optimism that we're trading with right now. I think it was our 18th win of the season as well, which is which matches the club record from 1996 in terms of a 38. Yeah, and we'd only won 3 games out of 13 before he was appointed. So that, again, that's sort of how far we've come under him. Again, but we're not just, I don't know, as I say, like, we're picking up loads of points, obviously, but we're playing a brand of football that is his brand of football. He hasn't just come in and we're doing some things, tweaked a bit here and there. He's completely transformed how we play, transformed our fortunes in terms of results. There isn't something that he hasn't turned, if that makes sense. Like, nothing has been, everything he touches has turned to gold at the moment. And again, that's so exciting, because he signed two players, one of which is a 19-year-old striker who hasn't started a game yet. And the other one, unfortunately, is going to be injured for most of pre-season, we think. But going into next season as well, like, it's crazy to be the only team, or only Man City, who've got more points than this in 2023, or more wins, or whatever the stat is. That proves that next season we can do this over a whole season, because he's had, what, 24, 25 games now, Emery, in the Premier League. It's not just a run of 10 games, or we've won seven games in a row at home. So we can do this over a whole season, and who knows where that's going to take us. Obviously, now we're going to have football on a Thursday night if we get through this playoff round. I mean, hopefully we do. And
come
then,
on, John, when we get through the playoff round, come on.
I'm trying to say that. But
if this competition is so easy that it's just like, oh, we're probably going to win it, we're going to get through the playoff round.
All right. And then
come on.
Whether that interrupts our season or not, we know that we can do it over the course of the Premier League season. We're only going to add to the squad as well. But yeah, in terms of the transformation, you can't, you're right, there isn't an adjective or a word to sort of describe how far he's taken us. And to be fair, even I thought when the Premier League sort of manager of the season came out, I know there's a lot of Villa fans saying, oh, it has to be Emery. And I was kind of like, well, you know, look at what Gary O'Neill's done at Bournemouth and what if Guardiola wins a treble. But really, when you look at it, now that we've actually qualified for Europe, he literally couldn't have done anything more. Like, he genuinely couldn't have. So, and again, he wasn't here for
a whole season. We should have won at Wolves, to be fair. We should have won at Wolves.
To be fair,
Man United. We should be knocking on the Champions League door, to be honest. You know, he's let
well,
me down.
That's what I mean. We're only 10 points away this season. And considering the start that we had under Steven Gerrard and that we had missed opportunities under Emery as well, like, we're not a million miles away already.
Yeah, well, it's funny you say, what do we call him? What is he? What is, you know, I pride myself on being a wordsmith, but even I'm struggling. I've just looked at the online thesaurus to try and find out what it is. And, you know, I thought trailblazer, and I've looked at the thesaurus, trailblazer, and this stuff like trendsetter, groundbreaker, pioneer. It's just to do what he's done mid-season is ridiculous. It really is. It really is ridiculous. And I think one of the reasons, and we're massively biased, but the fact that he's been overlooked for manager of the season, listen, there's a few contenders there, but and I'm jumping a bit here, but Jacob Ramsey today sums up to me, Aston Villa, what a talent, what energy, what brilliance, you know, he's a gifted kind of guy, but he's almost passing the world by. And I think that's like Aston Villa and Unai Emery. It's almost like people are refusing or just haven't quite understood what's going on here. There's some really special people. The real, really special vibe. It's a Villa podcast. I don't really care about whether the wider world's talking about it, but the fact that we're able to talk about it is brilliant. I think Emery fits in the same category. It's just kind of people are just, this is happening. And I don't know whether we're kind of trendy enough for them or whether it's because Villa are a big club anyway. You know, it was only a matter of time before they got there. But it's almost like this whole thing has slipped under the radar. I find it bizarre. I do. I find it bizarre. And obviously Brighton have been brilliant. Brighton probably are your surprise success story this season. So I can understand why they've commanded headlines. But you talking about Emery and the job he's done and he couldn't have done any more. Imagine if Emery would have come into a... Let's say it was Chelsea. Let's say Graham Potter gets the axe earlier in the season and Emery comes in and creates that transformation for Chelsea and takes them from halfway down the league and gets them in the Champions League. How different is the narrative then? He's suddenly the man. And he's done the equivalent to that, effectively. Okay, hasn't got us to the Champions League, but he's effectively done the equivalent to that. But let's allow him to be our secret going forward, you know. Let them finally kind of anoint the Sultan of Unai when he's lifting up some big trophies for us. In the meantime, we'll just praise him ourselves.
I think, and we all agree with it in terms of outsiders and football fans, pundits, whoever might not be speaking about us and in the way that we should, and obviously the media outside of us. But people within football are well aware of what's going on here, and people know how good Emery is. And when he joined us, there was only rave reviews about what we were getting. And I think John McGinn said in maybe last week or before the game, he said that if we were to get Europe, we already know that that's going to attract a better profile of players and players want to play under Emery. Obviously, Alemania didn't turn up in the end, but we're only going one way. And whether people like it or don't care about it or whatever, people within football and how we're going to expand and progress as a football club, that's what matters. And for me, that's Emery. He's so important to how we will progress as a football club. We've already seen it so far. Yeah, I'd give him a new contract. Like, we need to, something, pay him more. I don't know what he must
be
on.
That, didn't I, at one point? Remember, we had that discussion about when does he get a new contract? I would give him one now as well, yeah.
I said, to be fair, at the time, like, he must be on a good amount of money to get him here in the first place. But Jesus, like, we've actually got, we're in Europe now. It's actually happened. So now that we're over the line, I'm almost like, well, this guy is, he is God at the moment for Villa. He genuinely is. We can't really go wrong with him. We're only going to go one way. So I don't know if there's something. Listen, I'm sure the owners, they try to back him as much as they can, and they will continue to. So they try to get Alemania. They're going to back him with players. And again, I'm sure he's on a lucrative wage, considering that he turned down Newcastle or whatever a couple of years ago or last year. But is there something we can do? I don't know. Even
I'm not having a whip round for him, John. You know what I mean? Times are hard.
I know. It's just it's the thought of he's so important right now. I don't know. He's clearly, you know, he loves the club and he's, you know, settled well and started so good. But yeah, maybe a new contract. I don't know. Potentially.
He's not. Yeah, he's not going to be going anywhere. But it's the show of faith that you're our man. Yeah. We believe in you. Yeah. And here's a basically a little bit of a bonus. I mean, he's probably got a bonus for calling home for Europe anyway in his contract. Let's face it. We are going to talk about bits of the game and a bit and individual players, but just while we're on the kind of vibe of how far we've come, it's interesting, Matt, you mentioned Chelsea earlier and kind of what would Emery have done there. Did we all remember when we were like at loggerheads with Chelsea just trying to get into the top half? And it was, I think we were on 35, 36 points, something like that, for ages.
Are we not still in 11th? I thought we were stuck in 11th. We climbed.
Honestly, the difference between, you know, that kind of that turning point when we beat them, and I think we won three games in a week. Chelsea finished 12th, by the way, which is where we were trying to get home for a long time, with 44 points. Now, me and my dad were trying to work out, I think when we beat them, we overtook them on 38. So Chelsea have picked up 6 points since that period, which was March time, maybe. Villa finished on 60. They're on 44 points now. I'm sure it was like mid to late 30s when we overtook them. I mean, I could find the league table and prove it, but 37, 38, something like that.
Yeah.
Villa ended on 61. That's a 17-point gap on Chelsea that we're kind of, it was us or them who gets in the top half, Chelsea or Villa. And we've just gone on a rocket, on an unbelievable form, as we all know. It's just, yeah, I can't quite believe how big of a turnaround it is, to be honest. Yeah. And this is stuff that we'll talk about more on the end of the season show at the back end of the week. I just feel like, again, going back to the atmosphere, did you both stay like right till the end with all the lap of appreciation and all that?
Yeah.
Yeah, you as well, Matt?
Yeah, and it was interesting that Unai kept us waiting, didn't he? You know, everybody else had come around the pitch about 6 times, and it was interesting to see him walking around the pitch with Wes Edens and Nassef Sawiris. I can't lip read and I can't speak Spanish, but I can imagine him saying, yeah, and I've achieved this, and I got Jan Bednarek in my team when I first arrived. Imagine what I could do with a few kind of acquisitions.
Sorry to put in the point I'm trying to make with kind of the end atmosphere, and like you said, John, earlier, like the last couple of minutes of the game, like that again. I've made a few comparisons this week about how I feel this game was a bit like the playoff final, and we've already done the hard bit by getting here, and I've backed us to win today, and that's how I felt at Wembley 4 years ago. Stoppage time at Wembley is one that all fans go back to. It's like, what an excruciating time that was. The stoppage time today was like, with Brentford beating Man City, which I've gone big on saying, well, Brentford will get nothing against Man City, so don't worry about them. And maybe Leeds will get something against Spurs, possibly. But we had to win today with both of those other sides winning as well. So
I think you chopped it, Dan. I think you chopped it from the final edit. But I said on Friday, it's going to be a 2-1. It's going to be excruciating for the last few
minutes. Yeah, you did.
Bring it on. I said it.
Yeah,
I said it. To be fair, I knew we were going to win it. Even when the 6 minutes went up, it wasn't as if we were being back to the wall, heading balls off the goal line. But it was still a little bit too...
Yeah, it was still
Spurs had already beat Leeds. Like Brentford have gone and beat Man City. But I don't know, I believed it was going to happen.
Yeah, but today, like a silly decision or a last-minute penalty and we draw the game. We finished ninth today.
Oh, no, mate, let me lose on the referee when we get a chance. I know people have got a lot to go on to, but...
We'll talk about David Coote and his juggling balls in a minute. But to me, that kind of whole atmosphere and us all getting over the line and the pre-match and the flags and everything, and I thought there might be a bit of a hint of the new badge somewhere today. That's kind of bringing in a new era now next year. Whatever you think of the badge is kind of irrelevant. But the kind of the overarching point that we're on this upwards journey, the owners are fully behind the project and will invest. The manager is unbelievable. And, you know, unless you're talking Guardiola or whatever, I probably wouldn't want to swap him for anyone else in the league anyway.
I wouldn't swap him for anybody. Anybody.
No, for what he's building with Villa, agreed. But where we're heading, it's almost like when you see that final whistle go and the songs come out and the crowd is unbelievably loud. I wasn't wearing my watch today, but the last game I was there, I got like a noise alert saying, you're in a loud environment, watch out for your ears. If I was wearing it today, I honestly feel like it would have vibrated off my wrist. It was so loud. To me, that felt like, imagine what this place would be like if we just won a trophy or, God forbid, we win the league title. or we've qualified for the Champions League. Like, this is us finishing seventh place and the worst European trophy out of the three. And yes, like, context is important here, because when we've achieved more, you won't celebrate seventh place like we have there. But to me, that shows the potential that's there with Aston Villa now, and this kind of talk of a sleeping giant, blah, blah, blah. If anyone didn't quite realise how big this club could be and what the potential here is with NSWE and Emery, that was there as an example to show we're heading in towards, again, potential here, because we can't read the future, potentially towards big things with this kind of setup. It's very exciting, do you not think? Do you share my...
You know what I take from that, and this is me being pathetic, does that watch not annoy you? If it's like kind of... It tells you things... Does it tell you to like to put a coat on? You know, you won't feel the benefit. It's like having your mum on your wrist.
It does buzz me every hour saying, time to stand up. And I'm like, oh, God, all right. Yes.
Time for Europe.
Yeah, time for Europe.
We're a big club, mate, ain't we?
Yeah, of course, we know that, of course. Right. Let's talk about a couple of instances in the game. Then you've already mentioned the referee, so let's get that out of the way. Get the negative out of the way. I feel a little bit here like both clubs on, you know, Blue and White, a Brighton and Hove podcast, they'll be saying the same things about the ref's not giving us anything today, blah, blah, blah. I feel like both teams won't have been very happy with the referee today. But specifically, how many yellow cards does it take? I mean, how many fouls does it take, sorry, to win a yellow card off this referee?
Not many if you're a Villa player. Yeah, it was a poor show. Anyway, the last ref that we had at Villa Park as well for the Tottenham game, I remember, wasn't particularly good either. But yeah, a poor performance, wasn't it? There was just lots of tackles where you thought the player had won the ball, and then it's a yellow card, and it was very bitty in times. And then, yeah, just some dodgy decisions. Even, as you say, for Brighton, I think there was one where Matoma went down the line, crossed it, clearly got blocked by, yeah, I presume it was Mike Cash, and he gave a goal kick. And I'm like, what? I don't know.
Yeah.
The only change that I thought, unless I've missed it the whole time, was when it went to VAR. Afterwards, they showed a little screenshot, didn't they, of the decision. I don't know if you noticed that, unless I've missed it before. I think that's
new. Yeah, that was the first time. I mean, it didn't show me anything. Like, I don't know what I was supposed to take from those screenshots.
Yeah, I forgot my glasses today, so I couldn't see anyway.
So. I'll tell you the one that got me. What's the lad who came on for them defender at centre-half, came on for Webbs? Is it Van Heck or something like that?
Yeah, I think.
He came on, and there was a time where he was under pressure at the edge of his box, and he has kicked the ball, and it has gone straight into his goalkeeper's hands.
Yeah,
and if that's not a back pass, what is he doing with it? If he's not intending to pass that back to his goalkeeper, what is he doing with it? Is it a clearance behind in the halt end, and his goalkeeper's caught it? Just silly little... See a little thing like that. Yeah. I mean, the Mings one looked harsh on me, the yellow card, but I don't know whether he's coming shooting from behind. But I've not seen.
Did you see the motion he kept doing? The ref, like, he's basically saying you've swept him, basically. But come on.
Yeah, I just thought, and there was we had this last time, didn't we, against Spurs with a high line, and was it Matty Cash that he took ages to raise his flag? First half, I think Matty Cash made a block. People were throwing the bodies in everywhere, and we've said it before, and it's a cliche, but somebody's going to get injured by that flag. And I know it's a directive from the leagues; you can't always dig out the officials on it. But it's just such a frustrating rule that they've got to wait and wait and wait before they can put the flag up for things where they're quite clear and obvious.
Blatant. I think that's the annoyance of it. You can clearly see, I think that one was when Nciso was behind our line, quite obviously beyond the line. And then they continue and we're getting mad because we know it's offside and we know he's going to raise the flag. And then, yeah, I think Cash stretched out, I don't know, could have pulled his hamstring on in the day and someone blocked the ball, could have had it, you know, to the nose or something. I have no idea. But it's those decisions that are infuriating. And then there was a couple more where he did put up his flag, which then goes against the rule in the first place, which were tighter. So it's just a mess. So... yeah, the last couple of games, officials have been poor, and you just want a game where you don't even talk about them, and then they've had a good game. But yeah, that hasn't been the case for much of this season.
That's enough about the ref. No one cares. Talk to me, somebody, about Jacob Ramsey. Because, again, we've talked about him so many times now, and there's periods where he'll get a bit of stick because he doesn't have a great game, whatever. We kind of go, look, he's only 21, specifically 22 today. Happy birthday, JJ. What a birthday, 22. By the way. Qualifying for your... Is he 23? No, he's 22, I think.
I think if a fella called Jack Grealish didn't exist, and people will say rivals Grealish anyway now, but I think they're different, very, very different types of footballer. I think if Jack Grealish didn't exist, then Jacob Ramsey would be our best academy graduate for a generation.
Yeah,
the fact that we're even mentioning him in the same breath as Jack Grealish is just, I think sometimes we see him as this kind of all action, kind of, I don't know, box to box, energetic midfielder who can run and, you know, really explode forward and carry the ball. I think technically, sometimes I think we overlook his technical brilliance as well. You know, listen, sometimes he'll give the ball away, but very often, or more or less more times than not, he will pick the right option. And I think that I can imagine Emery loves him, to be honest. And I think Dean Smith, Steven Gerrard, and now Emery, every manager who's got their hands on him in recent years has seemed to have managed to elevate him to another level. And it's one of these ones where I talk about players being called up for England. I don't really care in terms of I want players to perform for my football club. But in terms of the recognition that they deserve, I find it a snub. I find it harsh on him because I think what he's doing and what he's doing consistently, again, it's going under the radar, but it's massively appreciated. I think it's fundamental to what Emery wants to do and the way Emery wants to play.
Yeah, it is. I agree with all that. But didn't he win that thing the other day, like the Academy Graduate of the Year or whatever?
How long does that exist? Is that a new thing or not? Or is
I saw a graphic that had five winners on it. I think Ramsey's one of them. It was like Mason Mount won one. Trent maybe won one for Liverpool. Can't remember the others. Saka possibly for Arsenal. So he's in good company for that. But ultimately,
looks a bit like a scout really bag, though, doesn't it? Looks like something you'd win for packing enough carrier bags on the, you know, down at Tesco or, do you know what I mean, tidying your room or whatever it might be. A bit of a token one, but there's recognition and there's recognition in there. Do you know what I mean?
The way he carries the ball, I know the comparison with Jack is there, and I'm not saying that I'm making that either, but the way he carries the ball and dribbles with the ball in like tight spaces is very Grealish-esque, I think, in some aspects, but also very different in the same breath. It's hard.
His deliveries as well were spot on today, and you know, dig out Luca Dean. There was an opportunity first half where Luca Dean's gone down the left flank, and we know he doesn't push on as much as Moreno, but. And he's delivered a chipped, floaty ball that's gone too far to the back post. Whereas Ramsey has driven there and he's picked a right up. You know, he's either drilled it low or he's looked up and picked a low pass. And it's just seems to be little bits of wisdom in there. And like I said, I think you can just see little bits of his game getting better and better. Talking about contracts, what's he on? You know, do we know how long he's tied down for?
Did he sign a new one? 2027?
Yeah. I'd echo everything that's just been said there. He is 22. Yeah, I wrote a post in the other week, so I should have known that. And in that, and I think I said it before, and Matt's touched on it there. It was like when Jack was coming through, and Jacob was sort of beneath him, and he wasn't quite in the limelight. And then I feel like Carney when he was coming through last year, and the Gerrard, everyone sort of focused on him because he does have big promise. But all of a sudden, he's now got. Is it 101 Villa appearances and nearly 100 Premier League appearances? And you're right, he has so many strings to his... Like you would think he's that player, as you say, that carries the ball and that can create and open up a defence, but his first few games for the club were away against Wolves, away against Leeds, and he's been asked to do a job by Dean Smith, which is to pack out the midfield and use his physicality, because for a player who, as you say, is 22, he's already... Not a specimen, but he's big and he's built out already. And say 100 senior appearances at that age, most of them in the past couple of years have been starts anyway. So yeah, as you say, must be a dream to work with for those managers. And in terms of his progression, I've said it before, and people can say what they want about Steven Gerrard, but just being alongside him and learning from him and having that sort of tutelage of here's what maybe the best Premier League midfielder or England international, former captain, England captain, how he went about it, that could have only done well for him. And then it's obviously having Emery after him is one of the best managers in European football. Dean Smith brought him through and gave him the opportunity in the first place. Before that, Darren Moore, I think he compared him to David Platt, how he arrived in the box. So we're seeing all these assets to his game that have all been developed by different managers. And now he's at the point where he's working with one of the best in the Premier League. And again, in Europe, it's only going to improve.
Old folks like me don't necessarily call them CDMs or CAMs or whatever. We call them midfielders. And I think he's got bits of his game that he can do all of those jobs. And I think somebody said in the comments, you know, talking about his humility, and you know, don't jinx it now in case they're all on the lash tonight. But you don't hear much bad thing. You don't hear anything bad about him. He's a young kid living the dream. He's a Villa fan from Great Bar. Ash will think I'm talking about him now. He's a Villa fan from Great Bar. You know, he's playing in a team in the top echelons of the Premier League. And this is not a dig at Jack Grealish, because Jack Grealish took a while to learn these kind of things. But, you know, some would probably say they've got some dirt on him now. I've never heard any dirt on Jacob Ramsey. So the fact that he can come to terms with this and be humble enough to kind of carry this and just crack on with your life and just become a kind of consummate professional.
I think a lot of that.
His family.
Yeah, I think you nailed it there, Matt. He's obviously got his brother Aaron, and then he's got Cole as well in the under-15s or 16s at Villa. I think his dad fought Ricky Hatton and stuff like that.
You'd do what he's told, wouldn't you, if that's fine.
But yeah, he's come from his background, his family. There's lots of reasons why certain professionals make it and some others might not. And I think the reason why he's progressed so well, and as you say, comes from or is sort of exuding so much, as you say, I don't know. He's beyond his years, isn't he, really, in that respect? He hasn't had to have sort of worked with, you know, in terms of years to get to where he is. He's here now. And probably working with Ashley Young, players like that as well, has probably done him the world of good. Like Jude Bellingham is probably the perfect example. His family as well, that sort of upbringing that they have. Job obviously doing his bit now. I think he's playing for Sunderland after leaving Blues. But those players get there for a reason. And I think Jacob is, for whatever reason, he hasn't had that sort of limelight. Now he's getting it at the age of 22, but I think it's probably a year or two overdue, really.
Yeah, and it's probably better in terms of keeping him grounded to get that limelight at 22 rather than 17 and be kind of towed down a different path.
Yeah, potentially. In a way, being behind Jack Grealish and almost Carney sort of stealing the limelight in a little way, he's always just done his work. Doing extra sessions with Richard O'Kelly at Bodymore, that sort of stuff. I'm sure loads of players do it, but he's sort of the fruits of that are really bearing from now.
Yeah, I've got to go at 8:30. I've got to get some butter for our mashed potato.
We're going to be done by then. There's a couple of points I want to mention very quickly. I was going to mention Douglas Luiz. I thought he was very good because he was absolutely everywhere. Player of the season, brilliant. I'm really hoping that his new contract doesn't involve some kind of Champions League release clause and he's off in the summer, because when he's parading around the pitch at the end and he's kissing the badge, and he looks like he absolutely loves it, and I would love him to be kind of...
Beyond Diego Costa's shoulders at some stage.
Yeah, he was absolutely loving it.
That's an accident waiting to happen.
I think he come out in sliders and carrying a bottle of something straight away at the end. It's like, he's absolutely loving it. I hope he's here for a very,
goal.
Very long
time. He milked
time.
His goal celebration. He was blowing
absolutely, as he should.
For everybody. He was brilliant.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah. As he should. So shout out to him. Shout out to Ollie Watkins for scoring his first goal, I think, since having his child. 15 in the league now for him, the first player to score that many in a season since Benteke scored 19. Again, 10 years ago, I think, 9 years ago, something like that. Beating his first target of scoring 14 in his first season. And it's, again, he's been on a bit of a barren streak over the last few weeks, but his upturning form in 2023 is a big reason why we got to where we are. And it's, again, it's his goal today that seals the deal. So shout out to Ollie Watkins.
Bought him a fish tank as well.
I did indeed. I've heard that once or twice. Another thing I want to mention very quickly, and we shouldn't give this airtime, but I have to because I'm in this kind of mood, from Brett, who's a Spurs fan, who says, is this the pointless podcast that will endure the pointless European seventh spot? And he's now arguing with the Villa fans in the comments about how big Spurs are as a club. You're not big. Spurs are a tiny club. Harry Kane's leaving. You've got no manager. You've got no sporting director. You've got no fans. Come back later when people care about Spurs.
Well, the badges are massive.
Exactly. Exactly. No one cares about Spurs. If it's so pointless, why are you still watching? We're here for Villa. That's what we care about. See you later. Where else did I want to go very quickly? That was it for the game, really. I've got no other specifics in terms of the match, in terms of players. We could go on and on all evening about certain individuals, but again, that was just a lovely, lovely performance on an Emery side. So what else do you want to mention, Matt, very quickly?
You were saying, Dan, that the pre-match seemed to be spot on in terms of encouraging people to get there early, cranking up the atmosphere, the flames that were going. I think a couple of flames weren't working, were they?
I don't know.
Splitting hairs. But at half-time... the prize where it lies, it wasn't up to its usual standards to me, mate. No. I'm sorry. I don't want to be that guy. But first of all, it came out late, and I can understand why it came out late, because Villa paid a lovely tribute to
that was good
people that we've lost. So that already kind of squeezes down your time frame. It wouldn't settle, would it? They had to the edges. They had to stand on bits of it.
It's just a subpar performance, isn't it, from Prizewet Lawyers? It's not what you want on the last day of the season.
Oh, it's set its standards. But having that, we had two winners today. So this chaos that ensued, the sprinklers are on, so the subs were warming up right in the line of fire as Prizewet Lawyers. I can't remember the fella's name, but he took ages to take
what was
shot.
He doing?
Took ages.
But somebody's won. Was it Castore and Fanatics?
I can't remember specifically. They won £150 voucher for the club shop, the first person. I don't know what the second person won, because they were shouting out the Pride Reward winners or something during that.
That was where the club let themselves down, because you wanted to create a big second half atmosphere. And as the players are coming onto the pitch, you're still telling, I don't know, Brian from wherever it is, from that he's won some vouchers. But I'm splitting hairs, mate. It was a great day. So I'm sorry, Villa. I'm not.
They had a freestyler as well, doing some skills on the side, which I thought, like, what's going on here? There's all sorts going on. You didn't know whether to watch the training. The prize were at large, or the freestyler.
You wait till you went to the Conference League semi-final when they've got me up and down the touchline on my unicycle, I'm telling you.
That was the last thing I was going to mention. So I haven't got it on here. Oh, no. Basically, that's really annoying. When I loaded up StreamYard, streaming servicing earlier, I'd put the unicycle clip in from, I don't know when it was, but I dug it out and found it.
You've not got the evidence, mate. I've never said it.
It's on my laptop downstairs. That's really, really annoying, because I was going to play it, and obviously this is live, so I can't edit it in. But you said, on whatever date it was, if Aston Villa get into Europe, I will learn Europe this season, I will learn to ride the unicycle. So Matt Kendrick, are you a man of your word?
I am. Well, I can't ride it yet. I'm going to learn. My dad, I've probably said this before, my dad's a church warden at a church in Smethwick, and I've been asking him in the last couple, knowing what was going to happen, I've been asking him, you know where the toilet block is, Dad? Is there a little corridor there where I can practice? So anybody in the wider Smethwick area, if they see me dressed as a hockey goalkeeper turning up with a unicycle over my shoulder in the next couple of months. I did say by the end of the calendar year, though, Dan.
You know what I mean?
Cool. I've got a 6 or 7 month run-up. Or roll up at this. So don't.
That doesn't mean you're going to do it.
No, but I'm going to practice. I'm going to try.
Okay. Will you bring the unicycle to the live show?
Why though?
Because I would love to try and see you attempt it in front of a crowd.
No. I'm not.
Okay. Stabilizers. You can start training.
Yeah. I will donate.
Let me do it on my own time. Let me practice and let me master it to a degree. And then we'll do a mid-season one, won't we? We'll do a mid-season one.
Yeah.
Okay. So we'll do another live show at some point in 2023, and you will attempt to ride the unicycle in front of a crowd.
Or there will be video of me riding it not in front of a crowd. That's the other option.
Deal. Shake on it.
Edited by you.
Okay. Deal. That's it for this show, the post-match reaction, the final one of the season. Matt and John, thank you both for your time this evening. And thanks to the 950 people plus the Spurs fan watching this on a Sunday evening. We thank you for your support all throughout the season. And I thank both of you for joining me as well after every single game, home or away. Some variation. You can do a couple of shout-outs. Like I said, this is the last one, so feel free. Go for it.
There's a guy that I never mentioned. I told you about him, but Postman Matt, who I was putting something in my car the other day. And this bloke did, not the other day, probably 6 weeks ago, and this bloke did a double take. And I thought he was looking at me because a footballer had arrived over the hedge from the school. And I thought he thought I was going to smuggle it into my car. Whether I was or not, doesn't matter. But he looked at me and he said, I'm just listening to you at the moment. Is it you, Matt Kennedy? I'm just listening to you. So he was listening to me on the podcast at the time, and he got to see me in all my glory. So a big shout out to Postman Matt, who I think lives in the Rowley Regis area. Then I was away last weekend in Shrewsbury with my wife and some friends, and my mate came to the bar and said, you've been standing here for 15 minutes, you need any help with the drinks? I've not ordered them yet, because I'm chatting to Jay, who's a Villa fan, who listens to the podcast, but he's based in Shrewsbury. So big shout out to Shropshire Jay. And there's another one chatting over lunch last week with my friends. I've got a mate who hates football, knows nothing about football whatsoever, but for some reason my name came up, and he's accountant, I think it was, or something. No, he's mortgage man, Glyn Walker. He's a big Villa fan as well. So I'm hoping that by giving him a shout out, he'll be able to get my mate a decent level of interest on his mortgage. So we're massive, mate, everywhere. Villa fans everywhere. So,
and that's probably a nice place to end. That I've seen a lot of comments coming through, and I've just said there, this is the last show. It's kind of like, oh, we'll see you in when the transfer window opens.
We're back tomorrow.
We'll be back filming videos throughout the summer break. We'll talk about this more in detail at a later date. Some of it will be generic, kind of, here's our top five favourite kits ever, or here's the best three Villa goals in our lifetime, or whatever. Some will be breaking news, some will be transfer related, some will be reflections on Europe and looking ahead to next season as well. We've also got the live show this Thursday at Hockley Social Club, which is, as of right now, it's a sellout. I am going to make another kind of 10, 15 tickets available, because inevitably people will not turn up. So I'm going to make a few extra available. So keep an eye on our social media for that. That's Thursday. This coming Thursday, 1st of June. We're filming it. It won't be live broadcast, but it'll be on the podcast probably next Saturday. So the 3rd of June, I think. 3rd of June. We're back filming a podcast tomorrow, which is going to be like, what is the Conference League? When do Villa enter it? Who is going to be in it? Those kind of things. Everything you need to know about the Conference League.
Could they be watching that, to be honest?
Looking through it going, I know we're in the playoff round, but are we in the first playoff round, the second playoff round, the third? Like, I don't know yet. So we're going to go away and find out everything you need to know and share that. So just because this is the last game and the last post-match show of the season, we're not going to kind of disappear now till July 1st or August 1st. We'll still be here producing content 2 or 3 times a week at least. So stay subscribed to Claret and Blue so you don't miss anything that we post. We'll see 375 of you at Hockley Social Club this Thursday. That's going to be one hell of a party now that we've qualified for Europe. So that's going to be a great night. You two, thanks for joining me as always. The 950 people watching, thank you. Without you, this podcast would be nothing at all. So lots of love. And we will see you tomorrow with the Europa Conference League video, and then it'll be Thursday at Hockey Social. Cheers, gents.
Cool.
We'll see you soon.
Up the Europe.
Thank you for listening to Claret and Blue, an Aston Villa podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, then please do let us know. We love hearing your thoughts and comments. We'll be back soon with another episode, but until then, up the Villa.